I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny, brought to you by our friends, the law firm Condori and Murrah. They'll take care of all the important stuff. Last will and testament, living trust, medical power of attorney. Things that aren't fun but need to be done, and they make it seamless and easy. In fact, my parents needed some work, and I set them up with Condori and Murrah, and they took great care of them, and I would send any of my friends or family to them. Schedule a consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Good guys, went to Lake Braddock High, George Mason University, based out of Fairfax. That's kmlawyers.com. Mention us, they'll get you a discount. Toby's been breaking down some of the ongoing news today in the NFL in updates. Just some quick reactions here before we get back to Terry McLaurin. The Vikings are going to be without wide receiver Jordan Addison for 3 games, settling his DUI case last month, and now the league ruling that he'll be suspended for 3. Toby, looking at their first 3 games of the season, they've got the Bears in primetime at 8:15 in Chicago. That's a sneaky spot for the Bears. That's a pick 'em game right now. I know that Caleb Williams is at a bad camp. We'll see what the preseason looks like for Chicago. But good offseason, huge debut, going to be electric, I would think, at Soldier Field for Ben Johnson's first game, Caleb Williams' second season. Vikings on the road, tough place to play against that defense. And now you're without Addison. J.J. McCarthy's first start in the NFL. Like, there's a lot of reasons why the Bears could be in business there. Then they've got the Falcons. Would have been the old Kirk Cousins rematch. But I guess he played them last year, I think, didn't he?
He did, yes.
Yeah, that's true, because he played against Darnold, actually. So that would have been the second time he met with Minnesota, I think. Second game back there in as many seasons. But it'll be Penix against the Vikings. But that's still, that's a second straight primetime game to start their season. So twice in a row, they're playing under the lights. That's a tough game against a potential playoff team. And then they've got the Bengals coming to Minnesota. So their first 3 games without Addison are against Chicago, much better. Atlanta, fringe playoff team last year. Bengals, who feel like they've got Super Bowl aspirations with Joe Burrow at the helm. Then they've got the Steelers after that. And that's a brutal first quarter of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they've got one of the best wide receiver duos when you have Jefferson and Addison on the field. And Jefferson's clearly the top dog. You know, as long as you have him, you've got a shot. But not having Addison on the field for the first couple starts for J.J. McCarthy is not going to be great, because they're going to get in a lot of work. And all of a sudden, you're just going to have to stop throwing the ball to Addison and then try to pick up where you left off 4 games or 3 games in. So we'll see. It's interesting. It's been a bit of a headache having Jordan Addison on the Vikings. It's, you know, plenty of off-the-field stuff, but he's a heck of a football player when he's on it. So we'll see if when he comes back, how good he'll be.
Well, you talked yesterday about liking Shedeur Sanders in that Browns quarterback room. What an opportunity for him come Friday night. He's going to start their preseason opener because of hamstring injuries to multiple quarterbacks. Joe Flacco's not going to play. Kenny Pickett's not going to play with a hammy. Rookie Dylan Gabriel also nursing a hamstring. So you're down to the number 4 quarterback on the depth chart. They just signed Huntley, the former
Tyler
Raven.
Huntley, yeah.
He's going to play, I would think, in this preseason game. He's going to have to. But I would imagine not only does Sanders play, but he's going to play a lot. Maybe a quarter, a half, something like that. What a great chance. If he looks really good, that would swing the narrative a bit, and there'd be a lot of momentum behind him. Not like Dylan Gabriel's insurmountable on the depth chart, or Kenny Pickett, same thing. Flacco's likely going to start, but he could climb the depth chart with a strong performance. I'm not as high on him as a rookie. I think he's got a lot of work to do. But he can't ask for a better chance than to start and play a lot Friday night.
Yeah, reports are that it's been kind of uneven for basically all of the quarterbacks in Browns camp. So
shocker. Bunch of bad quarterbacks.
Exactly. So having this kind of opportunity where you're the guy that's going to get the first game action, go out there, put some good film out there, and see what can happen. Because if you can have a good game, then you can start discussions. And not like anyone else is going to wow anybody. So if you can go out there and play well, this is a massive opportunity for what maybe he could get on the field earlier in his rookie year.
I want to get into something that I think might go better for Washington this year than people think. Something maybe folks are getting wrong about the Commanders. And we'll do that in a few. But a couple people want to weigh in on our Terry Orr game that we played. Joseph's in Silver Spring on Grant and Danny. What's up, Joseph?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You guys did most of the homework for me by playing the Terry Orr game, but it's just Yeah, Terry is a middle of the pack wide receiver. We love him, but he's a middle of the pack wide receiver. And you guys did the homework by listing all the receivers that you take ahead of him. So the way I see him currently, just from a contract perspective, honestly, is look at what T. Higgins got earlier in the offseason. T. Higgins got 4/115 with 41 guaranteed. So for me, if you want to sweeten this for Terry, yeah, you can go up to 116 to give him 29 even. You could. Another thing you can really do is you can play with the guaranteed money, go up to 50 or 60, and also backload that guaranteed money. Because if you go to $60 million guaranteed, say, but that $60 million is in the end of the contract, now that actually really reads like 4 years over 115 with $90 million guaranteed.
Right.
So I'm just sort of thinking like how you can. There are ways I could see that are Terry friendly that the team can still stay under that 30. I'm just going to hang up and see what you guys have to say.
No, it's a good phone call. I actually think the comp to T. Higgins' money makes a lot of sense. Now, the problem from the Buddy Baker perspective, the agent for McLaurin, is he's going to say, well, T. Higgins signed a contract as a clear wide receiver too.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jamar Chase is the breadwinner there that leads the team in catches and yards and targets and explosives and all those things. And if you're Buddy Baker and Terry McLaurin, you're not signing a contract as a wide receiver too. But yeah, I think it's a comparable player, puts up comparable productivity. Now, you can argue over durability, where Terry's played more than T. Higgins, who's in and out of the lineup constantly last season and over the last couple of years. But I think the point makes sense, and you got to something that's significant here. We talk a lot about AAV. It's a very tangible, easy thing. But the guaranteed money is really, at the end of the day, what is going to be the holdup or what is being the holdup on this negotiation now, right?
Yeah.
And I would imagine McLaurin wants to be in that $60 million range, DK Metcalf style. That's what he's going to demand, and the team doesn't want to be anywhere near that because they're already telling you, we think he's old. We think, you know, at the position, 30 years old, going to be 31. We think the decline starts in the next year or two. So they probably want to be out of guaranteed money after two seasons, which means at most, even if you're front-loading 2 years of, you know, $50 million in guarantees or something, the first couple of years are fully guaranteed and paid up. You know, you want $50 million of those guarantees gone, and you still have $10 million of 60 after that somehow becomes dead money or however that works out. Like, that's not what they want. And 60, I would say, is the floor of what McLaurin's asking for. He probably wants more like $65 million in guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the issue, is I'm guessing they'd like to be out of the contract without any real guaranteed money after 2 years. McLaurin's looking to probably have guaranteed money into the fourth year of the deal.
Yeah,
that's a big difference.
I think that is probably the holdup, because Diana Rossini had a report earlier today that said, when we talk about the DK deal, that maybe not so much the AAV is what he's worried about as maybe some other things, which would then probably be the guarantee. So just looking at the DK contract, which we've talked about a lot, that's a $33 million AAV, but it's $60 million guaranteed over 4 years, or 4 years, $132 million, and then 30, 60 guaranteed on that. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see, because also I don't necessarily want a fourth year on this thing. Because then you start to coincide, if you're adding on to what you currently have with this year, then you're starting to coincide with the Jaden contract. Part of the reason that I think the Terry deal can be somewhat easier than what other situations could be is if you do a three-year extension with him, it comes off the books as Jaden now has to get paid after that fifth-year option. And I think that
But if you front-load it a little bit, it's not as big a deal.
Sure, but
like the second and third years of his deal should be where the money is, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, I should say the second and third years from now, because I'm saying you're adding to this year. So, like,
yeah, just ideally
next year and the year after.
Ideally, you don't have anything really running into that Jaden contract, because the Jaden contract is going to be massive, right? So anything that's running into that. But yeah, I think.
But the Daniels money is not really going to kick in until 2029, basically.
Sure.
So, I mean, you're talking about having the 26, 27, 28 season still. Even if you signed a four-year extension with Terry McLaurin, there's not going to be guaranteed money on the very back end of that.
Yeah.
I think you're out of it for the final year. That's why I don't really view any negotiation with Terry as having a whole lot to do with the Daniels money, because Daniels has 3 years left on his current deal. Then what would be the fifth-year option,
mm-hmm.
right? Then, which they're going to pick up, obviously. Then the first year of his new contract is 2029. That's 4 football seasons away from even the, counting this one, from the fifth-year option. You're 5 football seasons away from him making, you know, $50-plus million, and God knows what the cap's going to be at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, the cap's going to be huge. So
no, and that's
I just don't think Daniel should have anything to do with paying Terry.
That's what makes it a little bit easier, in my opinion.
Let's go to Tris, who's in Richmond, listening. In Richmond, you can listen to us on FM 105.1 AM 910. What's up, man?
Hey, Toby. Hey, Grant. How y'all doing?
Doing well.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to keep it short this time. I think I actually rank Terry in the 8 to 12 region. He is hard to rank. I don't deny that. But my main point is I do agree that he doesn't create separation, but he's also the best contested catcher in the NFL. So whether or not you got, I mean, except for maybe Yak, like the ability to run after catch, I don't know why that matters. I mean, if you catch everything in your vicinity, I don't know why it matters if you have 2 yards between you and the defender or not.
I think the answer to that, Tris, probably is there's a sustainability. It's like the idea of a contested catch is a lower percentage catch, and it feels like you're walking a tightrope with a chair and someone on top of your shoulders when you've got to make a catch with a dude draped on your back up against the sideline. And Terry does it. There's nobody better at it. But if you're just kind of running free and you can get open and I can just dial you up with scheme because I know you're going to beat a guy and twitch somebody up, right? Doesn't that feel like it's more sustainable?
I mean, maybe, but I mean, you know, I just don't, I, you know, there's nothing about Terry right now that I'm thinking is going to, I mean, I know that there's like this unwritten rule that after 32 people fall off. There's nothing about, I mean, if we pay him 1 year of overvalue, I'm not worried about that.
And I'm just with by you the way, on that. I've said a few times.
I'll just say that on value, the one thing I'm, you know, no one knows the numbers. We're all talking about this hypothetically.
Yep.
And I just kind of feel like that the thing I'm wondering is if he's looking for 4 years. Like,
well, I'm sure he is. I'm sure him and his agent, thanks for the call, buddy. I'm sure him and his agent are looking for 4 years.
Yeah, I would think so.
That's part of the difference. It's the guaranteed money, it's the term, and how long do you have to pay him out? But
I'd be pushing for 3 if I'm the team. And if that's the, sure, if that's some of the holdup, I understand that a lot more.
The years don't matter. In other words, if there's no guaranteed money, then you could sign someone to a 15-year deal. Like, nobody, NFL contracts are just monopoly money and crazy numbers of years, theoretically,
yeah,
if there's no guaranteed money. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so all that matters is when do you get the guaranteed money off the books? So, yeah, he wants guaranteed money, I'm sure, into year 4. They don't want to do that based on his age, and I don't think they will. But where I'm completely with Tris is I don't have a problem slightly overpaying Terry McLaurin, and that's kind of been my point all along. There is a question at the core of all of this. Is it worth it? Is this worth what they're doing? The distraction, whatever this storyline is, the message being sent, the idea that everything is harmonious other than this, like, is it worth it? And to that, I would say, not to me. To Adam Peters, obviously, feels like it is. Brandon Sosna, who's the brilliant guy that does contracts, who's very, very sharp, he feels like it is.
Yeah, and I don't think it's worth it, too, for this team at this specific time. If this were the Kansas City Chiefs, if this were the Green Bay Packers, this were the LA Rams, take your pick of another franchise, I think it's just a regular negotiation. Think about where this team has been over the last couple of years in terms of changing ownership, fan base coming back, all this stuff, and then all of a sudden, you're going to do this with the player that is the most beloved in the fan base for a couple of million dollars. I just don't think that it was worth it. Even if, like, from a regular business sense, we could have this discussion, and I think it is just over business, and even if it were talking about is it worth it for another team, I think throwing in the added element about where this specific franchise is in terms of their franchise history and what's going on with the fan base, I just don't think it was worth it.
Yeah, when Tris asked about getting open versus contested catches, he does, based on being the number one contested catch guy in the National Football League, kind of render his lack of separation less relevant. There's no doubt about that. I think that's agreeable and easy to sign off on. But it is still irrefutable that the skill at wide receiver is to get open. That is the job. Like, the result is to catch the football, but the task is to run routes that can get you open. And that's what every team is seeking in wide receivers, and it doesn't get easier to do that as you get older. Ed's in Springdale. What's up, Ed?
Hey, thanks you guys for taking my call. Listen, We've heard it before. We hear it many times. The greatest ability is availability. If we take this simple formula, the number of games played plus touchdowns minus age, Terry McLaurin comes in, based on last year, Terry McLaurin comes in number four after Chase, St. Brown, and Jefferson, and just ahead of Wilson. People don't talk about the fact that he is always available. And, you know, so when we talk about him getting older, we have to think about how great the shape that he's in, how well he's taking care of his body. When I think of Terry McLaurin, I think of him actually being 2 years younger than his biological age, and he's proven that by how available he's been. So games
played so much less. To your point, Ed, thank you, buddy. It's a really good call. I also liked the simple formula, and then I couldn't follow it.
I did not get the formula, but
it reminds me of a scene in Little Big League, which is a movie I'm sure everybody sleeps on in here, where there's a guy, I think his name was Bowers, and he's like this nerdy, smart, like brilliant pitcher. And a young Bill Haywood, who's their manager, he's the kid manager, is like doing his homework before this big game to win the division. And Bill's like can't figure out how much pain he needs in this word problem. And Bowers goes up, based on the simple formula of R plus 2 plus 7 equals 6 plus A 2 times 2. Like the simple formula of like catches and age, I didn't track that. But I think the call's correct. And also, I'm going to tell you who agrees with him is the agent Buddy Baker. Buddy Baker is saying to them, he didn't play a lot in college. He didn't play the first couple years in college. You know, he is older than guys in his class, so to speak, but he has less mileage. Who cares how old a car is if there hasn't been a lot of miles on the tires?
Yeah.
If an old lady who goes to Food Lion once a week to get groceries but doesn't leave her house otherwise owns a car, and then I own a car with all my kids going to activities and the pool and this and that and work and driving to see my parents an hour and 20 minutes away, there's a lot more wear and tear on my car. It doesn't matter if hers is 2 years older. She's at 9,000 miles. The thing's brand new.
And you always bring up the fact, too, that he's durable. The fact that he hasn't had a major surgery has to play into that as well. Because, yeah, he's going into age 30, but he's going into age 30 being still completely healthy. If he had torn his ACL when he was 21, you'd be like, okay, well, that knee might start to wear down. He's fully healthy. He's fully good to go. That's one of the things that he brought up when he was talking at Eastern Motors. And I think it's a good point, right? Like, the less wear and tear thing, I can understand to an extent, but you still are turning 30. Like, regardless, you still are getting older, and that's going to play a factor. But the fact that he's never been majorly injured before, I think does have to be a big, significant part of this as well.
I wonder why they couldn't do, like, a three-year deal with $61 million guarantees or something, where he's a little bit ahead of DK. Even though DK's younger, I understand. And yes, you're overpaying. I get it. But basically, I'm just going to say, like, a, you know, $90 million deal or whatever. And in the first 2 years, you've got like $50 plus million in guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to eat some money on the third year or whatever, but that's where you're paying the tax of taking care of your guy.
Doesn't it just feel like if they get to that 30 number with the right amount of guarantees, like it doesn't have to be 33, doesn't have to be 32.
I think that's where it's going to end. But right now, I don't think that, like, if they offered that today, I don't think they would necessarily take it. I think they're asking for more than that. And they want more than that.
Well, sure.
But yeah, I think 30 is probably the range that would get it done.
Yeah.
Whether that's now or in a week, to me, it would be unreasonable for McLaurin at his age not to accept $30 million a year at the correct guarantees or something. Because, again, I know they won't like this on the Buddy Baker side. Cortland Sutton, not as good a player. He just screwed you, buddy. He's your age, and he's $23 million a year. Now, you deserve more than him, but 30 is a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, after 23 and a half, it's hard for you to go get 33 and a half.
Yeah.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Robert Mays of The Athletic is at Steelers camp. We want to talk about that, all the camps he's been to, but also the Micah Parsons, McLaurin Holdens, also Trey Hendrickson. We'll get to the bottom of some of the big NFL stories with Mays next.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered, inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Camp coverage on the Fan of everything the Commanders have going on is brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Speaking of camp, Robert Mays of the Athletics Football Show is at training camp himself. He was with the Steelers today. He's been making the rounds. He's on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. So, Robert, what's your camp tour of sorts look like at this point?
Today was my 16th camp in 16 days, which seemed like a good idea at the time. Has since turned into something a little bit different. I've got about 8 more teams after this, but in all seriousness, it's fun. It's my favorite time of year. I absolutely love just being able to go to all these places and talk football and learn about these teams. And so it's been a blast. I was in Latrobe, Pennsylvania with the Steelers today. I'll be in Charlotte with the Panthers tomorrow and then in West Virginia with the Texans on Thursday.
That's incredible. 16 and 16. That's admirable. You are grinding. So well done on that. This is off the beaten path, but I actually was trying to text a couple coaches about this today. I was talking to someone about Raheem Morris's comments that 7-on-7 drills really have no use for him. And in asking about that, it sounds like it's something that he's kind of done away with. And as I thought about it, Dan Quinn doesn't do much of it here with the Commanders. They do a lot of 11-on-11. Do teams still do 7-on-7? Is there value in that? Do you see that at practices very often? And in addition to that, like, how different is the physicality at camps? Is there anyone that actually, like, tackles to the ground at this point?
Teams still do 7-on-7. I was in Cleveland yesterday. They were doing 7-on-7. I think that there was some 7-on-7 in Pittsburgh today. I can't remember if I saw it or not. So it definitely does still happen. I think that the logic there is you're still getting a sense of, like, coverage rotations and certain things there while allowing the offensive line to do maybe a little bit more individual work. So you can kind of split your time that way. But when it comes to the physicality of training camp, I do think we've seen some teams kind of lean back into this a little bit. The Jets have been doing multiple tackle to the ground periods with Aaron Glenn. I know the Lions often do some of that, and I think the Bears were doing some of that today, including in 7-on-7, I want to say. So I think there are some teams who have a certain mindset about it. Obviously, so much has changed with the CBA for what you're even allowed to do. But I think that for the most part, a lot of the teams that have been a little bit more cautious with camp, where they haven't pushed the pedal down that hard, the Bengals come to mind. I think the Bengals have always kind of had a looser training camp. I feel like some teams are reevaluating that. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a little bit of an uptick in physicality over the last couple of years as we've seen other teams around the league, the Lions in particular, kind of realize some of the benefits of that.
You mentioned you were in Pittsburgh today for the Steelers camp. What'd you make of seeing Aaron Rodgers out there? What's the vibe around that team?
It's fascinating to see him in the uniform. You know, just I think it's a little bit jarring to see him in that jersey. You know, the Jets is one thing. Seeing him in Steelers yellow and gold is an entirely different thing. I think they're confident about what this can look like. You know, they have a young offensive line that I think is kind of the area of the offensive roster where they're really rooting a lot of optimism. I think that they have a really solid plan and a vision for what they want that group to be and then build everything else around it. I think with Arthur Smith in particular, their offensive coordinator, you know, there are certain elements of flexibility he's tried to build into his offenses over the last few years. And even with a veteran quarterback like Russell Wilson, just didn't feel like he was able to access some of that stuff. And now with Aaron Rodgers, I mean, you can do whatever you want at the line of scrimmage in terms of getting in and out of the right plays, packaging plays together. So I really do feel like they believe Aaron Rodgers is the right maestro to make this thing go. Whether or not that's true after what we saw from him with the Jets last year remains to be seen, but I think there's a lot of confidence about where this team is right now. They've been a playoff team consistently, and they've never really figured out the quarterback position. And I understand talking yourself into the idea that a Hall of Famer like Aaron Rodgers is your answer. We'll see if that's actually the case.
You mentioned Bears camp. We were talking earlier about the Caleb Williams viral video of him throwing into a net, and that's going to matter so much less than any of us kind of think as the season goes on. But the reports are either going to be glowing or not, and they kind of haven't been. Concerns too strong, but where are you at on him in year one with Ben Johnson and all that is going to come with him trying to learn a new offense and get off to a fast start?
I'm really not that worried about it. I think for a few different reasons. I think that we're about a week into padded practices of training camp. This is all so new. The season is a month away. And from everything that I've heard, they've really done everything they can to throw everything on his plate, right? We're going to give him everything, and we're going to see what works and what doesn't, and then pare it down from there. So I'm a very long way away from being overly concerned about what this is going to look like. I feel like if we get to week one and things look bad, that's fine. But I'm really, over the years, I feel like I've tried to tell myself that overreacting in any way, positive or negative, to how training camp is going is probably going to lead you astray more often than it's going to lead you to the right place.
I feel like the number one overall pick this year has gotten the least amount of publicity I can remember of any number one overall pick in quite some time. Have you had a chance to be out in Tennessee, and what have you made of Cam Ward and early talk around him, and what do you have as expectations for him this year?
I was in Tennessee. It was one of my first stops, and they're really excited about him. You know, I think that we always hear this with young players where, oh, he's in the building at 5:30 and he's such a hard worker. With Cam Ward, even off the record, even when it's just having conversations with people, they're bringing up the fact that he's in there so early that they've actually had to tell him to come in later because some of the rookies are following him around. Like, that's just kind of how it's gone. And their workload and just the demands of their day as position players is harder than it is for him. And so they've actually been worried about that. They're like, I get that you want to do this, but Eric Ayamonor has a much more demanding practice schedule than you. He can't be in here at 5:30 in the morning. So I think they're really excited about not only Cam, but that rookie class in general. Brian Callahan has been there for 2 years, but it's a new front office with Michael Borgonzi there. And I really do think that they feel like this group specifically, with Cam, Oladejo, their second-round pick at pass rusher, and then even Kevin Winston, their third-round pick, it's just a good foundation of players as they really try to start turning stuff around. And Cam specifically, I think they're really encouraged with a lot of the intangible aspects of what they can put on his plate mentally, how quickly he sees the game, some of the spatial awareness. Obviously, Brian Callahan played with Joe Burrow and coached Joe Burrow for several years. I'm not saying Cam Ward is Joe Burrow, but I think there are enough similarities with just some of the quieter, subtler aspects of how they see the game that it's left that coaching staff pretty excited.
Robert Mays, host of the Athletic Football Show, 16 teams in these last couple of weeks that he's been with at training camp. In the NFC East, how big is the gap between the Eagles and the Commanders going into the year? And then where are you on a Dallas team that it seems like a lot of people have differing views on with Dak Prescott back in the saddle?
I really don't know what to make of Dallas. That's a team that's confounding to me. Like, if you told me the Cowboys finished 7-10, I think it'd be hard to believe just because if Dak stays healthy, I think there's a certain floor. But there's just so much uncertainty with that team. You know, the offensive line is still a theory in year one of a new offensive system with a new offensive coordinator. The left tackle's already hurt. The right tackle's already hurt. On defense, they're down to like their seventh and eighth corners at this point because of how many guys are banged up. And I don't think it's an overly talented group to start with on the back end for them. So I feel like there's a ton of variance with that team because I do think there's a version of them that if that offensive line gels with George Pickens there and Dak staying healthy, that they can be good offensively and solid enough on defense to be a playoff team. In terms of the gap between Washington and the Eagles, I still think there's a gap just from a talent level overall. Like, I feel like Washington has done a good job of trying to fill in some of the margins at positions this year. You know, talking to coaches there when I was in Ashburn, they feel so much better about their ability to play man coverage this year because of the corners that they have. They feel better about their defensive line depth and flexibility. So I think as a defense, you're hoping that it can be more than the sum of the parts. But in Philly, I think you have some real star-level difference-making players that have emerged where with the Washington defense, we just haven't quite gotten there yet. There's a lot of good players. Are there star-level players? And then on offense, I think it's just going to be a question of do we have enough at the pass-catching spots if Terry comes back, and especially if Debo gets nicked up? The way that they've approached this is that I think they've looked at some of the other elite quarterbacks around the league and said, hey, if we protect that guy, he'll do enough for us. You look at the way the Bills have built around Josh Allen, et cetera. If you do that, the presumption is that Jalen is already one of those guys. He might be. Jaden might be one of those guys, but I think that's the bet that they're making, is that our quarterback is elite already, and we can take some cues from some of the other teams that have built around their quarterback in the right way.
With the four big hold-ins around the league, with Terry here in D.C., Micah Parsons down in Dallas, Trey Hendrickson, James Cook, do you see any of those guys holding out into the season and missing games, or any of those guys getting moved, or do we ultimately see stuff getting done and then playing for the teams they're on?
I just think that every team is incentivized to keep those guys. You know, the only one where I think the team could live without the player based on the construction of the team is like James Cook in Buffalo. The other three, when you consider the goals they have this year and how important those players are to the goals, I just don't think you can live in a world without them. Like, you guys are there. You understand what that pass catching group is like. Do you want to watch the Commanders without Terry McLaurin? I have no interest in that life.
Yeah, we can co-sign and verbally retweet that. Who is the most important? I was actually debating this on air with someone a couple days ago. Of those three, like, if you take them off from a war standpoint or whatever, Hendrickson with the pass rush for a team that's loaded offensively, McLaurin here where the drop-off, as you said, at receiver without him is massive. Parsons maybe is a little more replaceable only because, like, the expectations in Dallas are not at the same level. But how would you rate those three?
A great question. Mike is the best player of the three, and so that's the first place my mind goes. But when you look at Dallas's construction, the deepest part of the Dallas Cowboys roster, ironically, is edge rusher, even outside of Micah Parsons. They really missed him last year, but they didn't have Donovan Azaraku last year. Sam Williams, their second round pick from a couple years ago, was hurt last season. But I still think that that defense with him, without Micah, he just makes such a difference. But when you look at Trey Hendrickson and Terry McLaurin, both of those groups, again, I don't want to see either one of them. So I think you can make a pretty strong argument that it might be Terry or Trey just when you consider the drop-off from them to the rest of the players at their position.
Robert, appreciate the time, man. Safe travels around the country. Great to have you on, as always.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Keep up the great work. Yeah, you got to check out Robert's show. The Athletic Football Show is fantastic. Appreciate his insight on Grant and Danny. 16 trips.
Incredible.
Now that he's been on.
If, 16 in 16 days?
I am complaining about going out to Commanders practice like every day. He's just constantly in a different city.
I wonder what day he... Do you know
and
what
some
day
of these, by the way, are like in the mountains. Like, they're not next to airports. Like, you're driving, you're renting a car and going...
Do you know what day he was at Commanders camp? Because hopefully it wasn't one of the days it was like 100 and they moved up to 8 a.m.
It had to be at least a week ago, I would think. But what I love is when you talk to someone, like the detailed information on every team, he had a beat on the three or four biggest stories from that we're talking about from Commander's Camp. But he's going to be able to do that with, at the end of this thing,
yes,
30 teams or however many he hits out of 32. Pretty amazing. I love that. First-timers eligible for the 2026 Pro Football Hall of Fame class. I want to look at those names and see who might get in next on Grant and Danny.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Toby's in for Danny. I'm Grant, and this is The Fan. We're on social. At Grant H. Paulson for me.
At Toby underscore Altizer for me. Don't go to at Toby Altizer. That account is suspended for some reason.
Oh, is that Toki's account?
I don't know
was
what happened, but
off?
Somehow that one is suspended.
I got to imagine that that guy was saying some terrible things. I am Grant H. Paulson for the same reason, that don't go to Grant Paulson. I don't know if he still exists or not, but this dude, yeah, here he is.
At Grant Paulson.
March 6th, 2009. He was one of the OGs on Twitter. He tweeted one time, ever. He said, looking forward to watching Jay on Glenn Beck. I don't think he was talking about Jay Gruden, who was then a young, up-and-coming offensive coordinator with the Cincinnati Bengals. But he was psyched for Fox News and watching Glenn Beck. I know that much. So his 58 followers.
He didn't even get a like. He got a couple of retweets and a comment. No likes.
His followers are a bunch of people with like Redskins and Commanders helmets and like It's like people are like, man, this guy really doesn't tweet.
Yeah.
He does a radio show. He tweeted once in 2009 about Fox News, and that's it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so at Grant H. Paulson, at Toby underscore Altizer. So I mentioned I wanted to get into some of the names that are eligible for the Hall of Fame for pro football for the first time in 2026. I would have a very small Hall of Fame, okay?
So you're a baseball Hall of Fame.
I am a Hall of the best ever. Like every sport, baseball, football, certainly more baseball than football. I think baseball's Hall of Fame is way too big.
What?
Oh, yeah. Guys are getting in the last several years. Then I look at it, and I'm like, nah.
I agree on some of the guys got in the last couple of years. I'm like, to me, when I think of a guy, I should think Hall of Famer. If I don't think it right away.
Are you one of the best players of your era? If you're not, were you the best player at your position at any point? If not, were you one of the top several at your position? If the answer is no, you're not a Hall of Famer. But just generally, I would have a much smaller Hall of Fame than most. Whatever the number is, if there's 400 people in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, give me a pen. I'll knock it down to 225 for you right now. Like, I don't follow anyone on Twitter. I unfollowed my wife on Twitter recently. She doesn't really tweet. So that's the main reason. But I don't want to follow people.
Do you have Rooster blocked or muted?
Generally muted. But just people in my life, like my friends, are like, follow me on Twitter. I look at their Twitter feed. If you don't regularly tweet, if you don't tweet anything I need to see, it's just Twitter, man. It doesn't. I'll go to a movie with you. Let's go to dinner. I could be your buddy. I just don't need to follow you on Twitter. I use it for work. So my thing is, all the time I'm going through my Twitter followers and I'm like, can I get rid of this person? Can I get rid of this person?
I do that as well.
I'm a minimalist.
How many people do you follow? 323?
It's way too many.
That's it?
That's it.
I try to keep
mine. Do you know how many people of that 323 I'd love to unfollow?
I try to keep mine under
anyone's feelings.
I try to keep mine under 1,000. I'm at 973.
I could easily unfollow 125 of those people if emotions or feelings weren't part of it. Like this. Yeah, I would have a very small follower account, but a smaller Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Anyway, let's go through these names. Yes or no, first blush, Hall of Famer. Larry Fitzgerald.
Yes.
Obviously. If Larry Fitzgerald ain't a Hall of Famer, nobody's
well,
a Hall of
Famer.
Well,
by the way, wasn't Luke Kuechly not a first ballot? What the heck are we doing?
That's a good question. Larry Fitz, 11 Pro Bowls. Do you realize he was only a one-time first-team All-Pro?
That's crazy.
Don't know how that's possible, but he is one of the great receivers ever, certainly of his era. So, yes, he's in. Drew Brees.
Yes, no question.
Goes without saying, right? Drew Brees, Mount Rushmore quarterback of his era. It was him, Rodgers, Brady, and Manning.
I still remember watching, was it a Monday Night Football game when he broke the record against the then Redskins and you had to hear about it every second of every day? Got annoying, but good for him.
He was never an MVP. He was only the first team All-Pro quarterback one time. 13 Pro Bowls, Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP, comeback player of the year. The list goes on and on. Walter Payton, man of the year. He's a Hall of Famer. Here is a really interesting one. Because this guy is someone I have always thought was just massively underrated. Philip Rivers.
I think he is.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. In my perfect world, where I'm the arbiter of the Hall of Fame, which is way, way smaller than it currently is, Philip Rivers does not get in. But based on the standards that you people have allowed, with mediocre Jags like Eli Manning getting into the Hall of Fame,
yeah.
Phil Rivers needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Phil Rivers is a better quarterback than Eli Manning was. Eli can't hold his jock. Now, Eli got on a couple of heaters in the playoffs and luck boxed his way into a couple of Super Bowls.
If Eli, it's kind of the corollary because Philip Rivers had a better career in terms of numbers and everything than Eli, but they're kind of connected, obviously, with the trade.
Well, the stuff that Philip Rivers controlled, he was better than Eli.
If Eli is in, Philip Rivers has to be in. If Eli's not in, I can leave Philip Rivers out.
Eli's going to be in because people can't help themselves with Super Bowl rings. But again, I would say no. But he should be in because you guys have allowed, John Kitna to get in somehow. Jason Witten.
Yeah, I think he's Hall of Famer.
Jason Witten should be in. 11 Pro Bowls, 2 All-Pros, Walter Payton Man of the Year. Jason Witten was like one of the first high-volume beast tight ends.
He was so good. Just couldn't cover him. Always open.
He caught 73 or more balls almost 10 times at the tight end
Crazy.
Position.
Crazy.
Who else? Let's see. Other names of interest. Frank Gore.
No.
I'm also out on Frank Gore. I think Gore's going to get in because he's got the lifetime achievement.
He's got
totals.
The volume stats, but at no point in your career, or in his career, did you think of Frank Gore as like an elite running back?
Zero black ink. What I mean by that is on a Pro Football or Baseball Reference page, when you lead the league in something, you get black ink. He never led the league in anything. Not, he's just good, great player, Hall of Very Good.
Longevity award.
Not a Hall of Famer. Yeah, that's the thing. You play from 05 to 20, 16 seasons at a position where most guys play 6 years.
Yeah.
You're going to rank in the top 10 in a lot of categories. Julian Edelman is on this list.
No.
I agree. Marquise Pouncey.
No.
I agree. LeSean McCoy.
No.
Thomas Davis.
No.
Thomas Davis, based on the low threshold now, is very interesting to me. People sleep on how mediocrely disappointing he was in Washington under Ron Rivera.
Well,
By the way, Thomas Davis only made 3 Pro Bowls.
If Luke Kuechly isn't first ballot, Thomas Davis better not be getting in the Hall of Fame.
He had a ton of injuries, too.
He
so,
did.
Yeah.
He was also one of my favorite guys ever.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Good player.
I'll say no to Thomas Davis. Greg Olson. Hall of Fame analyst. Greg Olson's not a Hall of Famer. This isn't that complicated. He made 3 Pro Bowls.
Did he only make 3?
Yeah, there's no black ink on that page. That's not a Hall of Famer.
Okay, I'd have to look, but probably not.
Never an All-Pro. Alex Smith. No. Why is Alex Smith even listed on this?
It's the same thing. They did this with Tony Romo and try to pretend like he was a good quarterback. He was not.
I think we could probably stop naming guys now, right?
Yeah, Alex Smith is not a Hall of Famer.
So first ballot, we go Fitzgerald, Drew Brees, Jason Witten.
Yeah.
And maybe... I would maybe go Phil Rivers, but I think he can wait a year.
He's not first ballot. He doesn't deserve to be in the same conversation as those other guys.
Eli didn't get in, right?
I don't think so.
On the first ballot?
I don't think so.
Look that up, Dad. I remember there was like a huge controversy about Eli Manning waiting on Hall of Fame. He did not get in? All right, good. I mean, he'll get in next year. People, again, they fall all over themselves. He's got 2 rings. He's better than Marino. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We're getting you ready for Nats baseball at 6:15. Couple of things before we get out of here. We've got our poll of the day from Metropolitan Moving and Storage on trouble areas for the Commanders. Want to update those results. And also, Jaden Daniels admitted something many of us had thought for a long time, but that he had never commented on until just yesterday. That's next.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.